Track 13. We're coming to the end of the magazine with the Past Lives feature, which this month looks at the Norwich City star who put Matt Busby in his place, and Wild William Wyndham, the Felbrick Hall scandal. First, Bligh's Spirit of 59. Chris Armstrong looks at the remarkable career of Norwich City striker Terry Bligh.
Saturday, the 3rd of January 1959, was a day I shall always remember. It was the occasion of my first visit to Carrow Road, where Norwich were playing Southend United in the newly reformed 3rd Division of the Football League. My brother and I came in on the special football bus from Holt. During the game, these buses were always parked back on to the very edge of the river. One of the additional entertainments after the game was to listen for the occasional splash as supporters who'd been caught short went behind the bus to relieve themselves in relative privacy, forgetting in the dark where they were parked. There were nearly 20,000 at the game and Norwich won 4-0, all the goals coming before half-time. But it wasn't this rare and heartwarming success that so enthused the crowd. Norwich were, if my memory serves me right, only 16th in the league at that time. But the fact that being at the game offered an opportunity to buy a ticket for the following week. On the 10th of January, City were to host mighty Manchester United in the third round of the FA Cup. The Busby Babes, despite the tragedy of the aeroplane crash at Munich, which took the lives of so many, could still field a team whose names read like a who's who of football. Charlton, Scanlon, Violet, McGuinness, Fuchs, Gregg. Enough to put the wind up much larger clubs than Norwich. Matt Busby paid City the compliment of taking them seriously. In December, he'd come to watch the second round replay against Swindon Town and left with what he must have felt was a fair picture of the side. He would have been right. 10 members of the team he saw were to play against United in January turned out for Norwich that day, but one player missed the game through injury, and that player was to destroy United's cup ambitions with an astonishing performance. Terry Bligh, a Fincham-born boy who, after a trial had been rejected by Norwich, had, by his prolific goal-scoring in non-league football for Bury Town, persuaded the Canaries to give him another chance. His first season, 1956-57, yielded just 2 goals from 9 appearances, and Norwich had a run of 25 consecutive league matches without a win, plus ça change. In the following season, he didn't play at all because of recurring injury problems leading to cartilage surgery. So, when he took the field against Manchester United, he was virtually unknown. By the end of the game, his name was being penciled into every journalist's notebook. The addition of the Pinken that evening, with an unerring eye for the dreadful pun, ran a banner headline, Bligh Bligh Babes. For, on a snow-covered pitch, Norwich had, as the Eastern Daily Press recorded, thrashed one of the greatest teams in the land, who had, at that point, completed a run of 8 consecutive wins in the First Division. Bligh scored twice, hit the crossbar once, and had a header which Gregg could not hold onto. Errol Crossan, the Canadian former ice hockey player on the right wing, scored when the ball bounced back off the keeper. Bligh's first goal would, these days, when commentators and reporters seem to feel that statistics are more important than describing the play, be called an assist and attributed as such to either of or both Terry the Count Alcock, who crossed the ball to Bobby Brennan, who squeezed it through for Bligh to strike it past Gregg. His final goal, just before the close, was a magnificent strike, which the press reported had even goalkeeper Gregg applauding. The ever-modest Bligh said that he took the shot with his eyes closed. In those days, the traditional forward line of 5 players was the Norwich norm. Apart from Crossan, there was the mercurial Jimmy Hill, not the one with the chin and the beard, Terry Alcock, perhaps as good a wicket-keeper as he was a footballer, and Bligh himself and the wonderful Bobby Brennan, probably the most skilful member of the team. Brennan, a Northern Irish international, played at centre-forward for his country, but on the left wing for Norwich. Brennan was Norwich's Stanley Matthews, with fabulous ball control and a shimmy which left full-backs stranded time and again. Earlier in his career, he was described as speedy, but by this time he was approaching his mid-30s and the speed was not so evident, especially in the second half. I formed a theory about this half-time change of pace. At the time, charities didn't collect in boxes outside the ground. Instead, at half-time, four men would each take a corner of a tarpaulin and carry it round the ground for spectators to lob coins into for whichever charity was being supported. Probably more coins hit the people at the front of the stand than went into the tarpaulin, and a number was certainly aimed at the police who patrolled the touchline. Some missed altogether and lay on the side of the pitch. Footballers were not paid extravagantly then, and we used to joke that Brennan, patrolling the left wing, was always on the lookout for pennies which had missed the tarpaulin and could be stuffed into the pockets of his shorts, and that their weight slowed him down. But for all the wiles of Hill and Brennan, and the speed and crosses of Alcock and Crossan, it was definitely Terry Bligh's day. He stole the show. And that was just the start. He scored five more FA Cup goals before City were eventually knocked out in the semi-finals by Luton. Replays were necessary against Tottenham in the fifth round, Sheffield United in the sixth, and Luton in the semi-final. These contributed to a crush of fixtures, which resulted in Norwich playing a game, on average, every 2.5 days by April. A contemporary cartoon in the national press which showed a couple out shopping with the man who held the shopping basket dressed in football gear and had a caption which explained that he played for Norwich and had no time to change. And while their minds were primarily on the cup, Norwich were climbing the league as well. They eventually finished fourth. Terry Bligh's contribution was astonishing. In 23 league games, he scored 22 times and ended the season with a combined league and cup total of 29 goals from just 32 matches. He started the following season in similar form, scoring 3 goals in the first 5 games, but injuries again took their toll, and in what was a successful season for the club, who clinched promotion to the second division, he was able to play just 15 times altogether. His career at Norwich ended there, whether because of concern about his fitness or questions as to his ability playing at a higher level, he was sold. He joined Peterborough, newly elected to the Football League, but two divisions below Norwich, and were soon causing City fans to regret the sale of their star striker. Peterborough went on to score a huge total of 134 goals in their first league season, and Terry Bligh scored 52 of them. Not only did Peterborough win the fourth division title, but Bligh's remarkable tally was, and remains today, the highest number of goals scored post-war by one player in any league season for any club. His extraordinary scoring record attracted Jimmy Hill, yes, this time the one with the chin and the beard, who was manager of Coventry City, and he signed Bligh for £12,000 in 1962. Ambitious for promotion to the second division. Bligh obliged, as usual, scoring 25 goals in 32 games, but this wasn't enough for Hill, who sold him to Notts County for a small profit, to the outrage of some Sky Blue fans. At County, he had a disappointing and short career, slipping into non-league action as player-manager of Grantham Town in 1964. Always a modest man, he accepted his exodus from the league with grace and maintained his enthusiasm. He claimed no great skill, just the knack of scoring goals, which endeared him to the fans of his successive clubs. When he finished playing in 1970, he continued as manager until 1978, when he was sacked. 14 years as manager of one club is almost as rare an occurrence as 52 goals in a season, and he was certainly popular with the players. When he was sacked, they threatened a walkout, and published a bitter open letter about the attitude of the directors. In retirement, Bligh opened a sports shop in the town, but died from a heart attack in 2009. Grantham named a street in his honour, and he's remembered with affection too at Carrow Road as a member of Norwich City's Hall of Fame. Many others will, like me, never forget his second goal against Manchester United. Now, the saddest part of this story is that we never discovered whether he would have been as effective in the higher leagues, so he will never be as famous as other great strikers of the era, such as Jimmy Greaves. Their paths did cross once in 1976. Greaves ended his playing career at Chelmsford, who in October 76 defeated Grantham 4-2, Greaves scoring twice. Sadly, by then, Bligh, about 5 years older than Greaves, was no longer playing. Had he been on the field of play, rather than in his managerial dugout, the score might have been.